When raising a Pacifico beer with friends you just met turns into hitting up their friend's local art show, getting inspired to create something together, and painting your first mural, you found what was waiting for you. Pacifico. Life's waiting. 21 plus only. Discover responsibly. Pacifico Clara Beer. Imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What is up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Tour Life. I am Paul Uliberry. Today, Brody Smith is not going to be joining us, unfortunately. He's on a vacation in Hawaii. Time difference really didn't line up too well. So I have my good friend who's going to co-host with me, and that's Big Germ Jeremy Kohling. Jeremy, welcome to the show, buddy.
Thanks, man. I'm happy to be on the show for the first time. It's kind of crazy that it's taken this long, but I'm happy to be here filling in for the great Brody Smith.
Right. Yeah, we'll miss him. We got a great show for you guys tonight. We have a few awesome guests. First one going to be in about a half hour or so after I catch up with my good friend here. We're going to be joined by Brian Schwaberger, going over a few pretty cool topics. This guy is a prolific winner on the PDGA Tour. He's won over 300 events. He plays every single weekend, literally sometimes twice a weekend. Sometimes once a weekend because he normally plays twice a weekend. And that's going to be a good talk. I want to go over a few things like what that's like, maybe some ratings talk as well. I like to go over some of those things, and just get to know him a little bit because I feel like he's a name that more people should know for sure.
Yeah. I mean, Schwebby's the GOAT. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, obviously he's not the greatest player of all time, but as far as winning, nobody knows how to win or nobody's won more. Here's a stat for you. I'm sure that we're going to talk about this later, but did you know that Schwebby has won 39 tournaments this year?
What? Yeah, save that for
39 tournaments this year.
Save that for the
right, we got more of that stuff.
That's unbelievable.
So crazy that you called me up and you said, "Hey man, Brody's in Hawaii, yada yada." I already knew where you're going. Super happy to join. And then you told me that Schwebby was going to be our guest. By the way, he's not Brian Schwaberger. He's definitely not Brian. He's Schwebby or Schwebel Schwabbles. That's all I've known him since 17 years of knowing this guy. But I actually randomly talked to Schwebby for about an hour before you called. So I already have these things dialed up, ready to go. But one of my favorite people on the planet, definitely a guy that I've been calling Big Brother since I got into the sport. And I've known him since basically the second tournament I ever played. So we go way back and super excited to be on the show talking
love
to
it.
Him
After
today.
Brian, which is going to be a great interview, we're going to actually have another awesome on. Connor O'Reilly will be joining us as well. And that's going to be an interesting topic because I want to go over a few things about the tour. I mean, this guy is a national tour winner, so an elite series winner, and struggled the last couple of years. And I want to know what that's like kind of on the tour coming out of it. You know, this guy's a hard, hard worker. I want to kind of dive deep into his mentality because he's not the type of guy that gives up. And we'll dive into that. And then we'll do some listener questions and then we'll get out of here. But Germ, what have you been up to, man? Off-season stuff? Talk to me.
I don't really call it off-season. It's, you know, there's so much planning that goes into the next playing season. I just call it the non-playing season. Earlier today, I heard that James Conrad's doing a no-throw November. I don't know how I missed that, but I think that's hilarious. And I also think that it's mentally a really smart thing to do for a touring player to give themselves a little bit of a break. You know, I haven't been playing that much disc golf, honestly. I've been really busy with, you know, well, you had your wedding, and the following weekend, Paige Pierce, and now Ayla Pierce, as she's renamed herself, got married. And then a couple weeks later, Jules and I were driving up to Philly for Thanksgiving. And on top of all of that, we just recently came across an amazing opportunity that we are taking advantage of to move. And so we're going to be moving from a very small house that we live in right now to a house that we can grow into and has, you know, a nice backyard and a nice community. It's just west of Charlotte Mecklenburg city limits, so it's technically in Mount Holly. But other than that, yeah, we've just been really busy with that and preparing for that. So it's been consuming of my time.
I mean, we've talked about this a lot. You've never been a guy in the off season to like just go hard and train. You use it as that for the most part. I mean, you play every single week normally in the off season, at least once a week, something, and play, but what is that like mindset? Like, have you just always done that? Or like when you were a rookie, did you play every single day and you practiced for the tour? And how's that gone for you through your career?
I mean, you know how it is. It changes so much. Yeah. When I first, the first three, four, maybe even first 5 years of playing, there was not a day that I could really remember where I wasn't either playing or putting or doing something to work on the game, because it wasn't just to get good at disc golf. It's because I was such a freakishly obsessed with it that there was nothing else that I wanted to do. It consumed me in every single way. And as I've progressed through my career, my off season time is certainly not not really consumed with playing as much as it is planning the next season, but also resting. I mean, as my body ages, I need the mental rest as much as I need the physical rest. And if I want to perform the next season, I have to make sure that I'm not burnt out before the season even starts in February. So, but I mean, you know, with us, both of us, we have such similar schedules with travel, and then we got practice rounds on Tuesdays. We got other things going on throughout the week. And then on top of that, we're trying to compete on the top level on tour. You know, it doesn't really leave much time to do anything else other than play. So when the season comes to an end in October, the last thing you're really thinking about doing is going out and playing 4 or 5 days a week. Kind of lucky to get out and play once a week, even though for me, it's been a lot less than that lately. I usually start ramping up the practice and really get myself ready for a tour come January. But like you said, man, the rest period is so important.
What about like playing smaller tournaments? Is that something that you enjoy? Because it's like something that I've learned in the last like couple months. Like I forgot that it's like my favorite. Like I just absolutely love it. I love going out, meeting new people, playing a course, putting that pressure on me. Or on myself to, you know, play smaller tournaments. I feel like that's where I've kind of found the passion back in golf. I was feeling a little burnout after the season. Totally. I mean, it was like a crazy grind the last part of the season because of all the things that you mentioned, of course. But then I was like on the bubble the whole time. And I was just stressed about like, oh, could I possibly make the tour championships and all this stuff? Once it was over, I was just like, didn't think about disc golf for a long time. I had the wedding, of course, so that helped keep my mind off of things. But then I kind of made a vow to myself. I was like, I'm going to play smaller tournaments this year just because it keeps me sharp and I don't enjoy practicing. Like, I don't enjoy going to the course and just like playing casually. I'd rather go to a field or I'd rather play a tournament, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Those little tournaments keep you sharp. I mean, it's not so much about the, you know, when we're playing on tour, like you said, you've got so many things to think about. You've got tour points, you've got, you know, our rigid schedule. But when you play like a local C tier or local B tier or whatever it is, it's just, it takes you back to the roots of what makes disc golf fun. And I miss that, you know. So for me, I wish I played more of these end of season tournaments. But I really do try to take that time to kind of decompress. That being said, I do have a tournament coming up in December that I've played every year since I started playing disc golf tournaments in Myrtle Beach called Tupelo Bay. And it's just one of my favorites. This year it's unsanctioned, but it doesn't matter for me. It's a nostalgic tournament. Yeah. You play the whole tournament on golf carts. You just play with your buddies. You're not even playing with your division if you don't want to. Like, you can play with whoever you want all three rounds. And yeah, so it's just a really fun tournament. And it just reminds me of why I like to play disc golf, why I'm still doing what I'm doing. So I'm there with you all the way, buddy. It's like those small tournaments have such incredible heart to them. And you get to see those old friends that you haven't seen in a long time, right, that only play the regional scene. And I love reconnecting with those guys as well.
100%. Have you ever thought about this? Cause this is kind of fascinating, is like to kind of sit back and like think of the best players that we got. Like, what are they doing right now? You know what I mean? Are they really sure practicing? Because as a pro, you know, after all these years, of course you get an interview with somebody and I'll be like, oh yeah, you know, I'm grinding and, you know, playing, I'm in the gym. Kinda, you know what
Not
I mean?
Really.
Like kinda really. I am. Like, there's truth to it.
There's some people are.
Yes.
You know, like, you know, Ricky's in Arizona putting right now on hole 6 at Vista. Like, you just know that's what's happening. I think Ricky is.
But that's what's so fun about it, is you can be like, I wonder what they're doing. And you think that about this person because of who they are. But what are they really, what are they really doing? Like Macbeth, you know what I mean? Is he running on the treadmill right now? Because like, those are some like.
He's running after a little baby.
Yeah.
that's what he's doing.
I called him or I texted him, I think it was like last week. And I'm like, hey, you want to get on and play some Fortnite? And he's like, I will after I got to put the baby to bed and then I'm going to go run on the treadmill and then I'll get on. And I'm like, was that a flex at me? Like, but I think that's really what he's doing. You know what I mean? I think that's what they do.
Yeah, sure. I take Macbeth at his word on that.
Yes, me too. Absolutely. So it's like funny. Like, I think about Calvin, like, what is, like, how is he training? You know what I mean? Are these guys switching it up? And I, of course, you can ask
down the list and I would speculate with each individual one. I feel like we could have a 2-minute conversation and debate, if you will, about what's Calvin doing. I think I know that Calvin is probably not playing disc golf, but at the same time, him living in Tampa opens up the opportunity for him to go play anytime he wants.
Yeah.
But what about our northern dudes? Like, what about our, what are they doing?
It's cold over there.
What's Gannon do? I think Gannon's putting in his basement. I think Gannon's putting the work in the basement, but like, what is Casey White doing? You know, like, it's a little bit cold in Massachusetts right now. I'm calling you out, Casey. Are you out there playing? But yeah, it's hard. You know, like, today it was in the 40s here in Charlotte, and it's like, actually went out and played.
Those
today.
Guys are probably going to be so mad that you just said that.
I know.
It's 40 sure degrees Casey's here. It was hard, brutal. Sun was out shining. I couldn't come out of the house. I was sitting by the fire.
It was, to be fair, it was like 49 to about 52. So, and it was beautiful outside. I actually went out and played the that horse course, that private course that Stan McDaniel's been working on a lot out there in Indian Trail.
I did.
I can actually take credit for it because I've played so few rounds. Actually, I was talking to Chandler Kramer today, randomly earlier today. And I told him that I think since Maple Hill's last round, I can count the number of rounds I've played on maybe this many hands. It hasn't been that many because I've been so busy. But I, like I said, that will be ramping up. But you know, I mean, I think that it's like, at this point in my career, me not playing a lot keeps my body healthier. And as long as I'm putting, you know, I'm still going to putting league every Tuesday night.
Yeah. I got to make it out there again.
Dude, the Yuli Foundation was you guys were literally set up yesterday.
Yeah. I was out running on a treadmill, dude. I couldn't.
That's what Stephen Belair told me. He said, yes, yeah, Yuli couldn't make it. He's working hard. He's training for 5K.
Yeah, exactly. That's hilarious. I think it's like, here's another point. Because you brought up, what about those guys over in the cold areas, like Michigan, Iowa, Illinois? Because there's a lot of great players from those places. It has to be a benefit. It has to be a benefit to live in Florida, live in the Carolinas, and to live in Arizona. Especially if you notice, like, this is what I'm thinking. Like, Arizona doesn't have a ton of courses. So the really good players that live there, they all play together quite a bit. You know what I mean? And that can really help with your off-season training of having two people push you or whatever. I remember Nico coming out to Arizona early in my career and us training together. And that was so beneficial because he was so much better than all of us. And to be able to play with him the whole offseason.
2013, 2012, 2011, it was like
2010, 2011, 2012, somewhere in there. And I remember that being like fantastic and really helped develop my game because he was just so good at everything. Back then, especially. And then even early on in my career, Corey Sharp, I would go to Utah in the summer and he'd come to Arizona in the winter for one full season. And that really helped the development of.
Sure.
There has to be like in the off season, there has to be a benefit to being in a place where you can play and enjoy it. If it's 70 degrees out or 65 degrees out, and perfect weather, you want to go out there and do something. You want to go play. That? Exactly.
Yeah, who would argue that? Yeah, it's the best. I mean, that's why Charlotte has had such a high influx of people moving here. I mean, it does get kind of chilly. It gets to a point where you don't want to go out and play. You know, I mean, nobody wants to play in the 30s unless they're playing a tournament that they're like signed up for, or at least that's just my privileged perspective down here in the South. But I mean, it usually stays in the high 40s to 60s.
Yeah.
For pretty much the whole winter season. I mean, 60 is pretty warm.
Yeah.
It probably stays in the 40s to 50s. But I mean, you know, that's fine. You know, there's no problem there. And if you live south of here, then yeah, you're great. In 2013, when Garrett and I went to Arizona a little bit before the season started, we moved out there in like late January, and we had all of February to prepare. It was incredible. Like, we got to hang out with you and hang out with AB, like a little young AB every once in a while came out. That was fun. Who else was out there at the time? I mean, I think Ricky was living out there. Devin Owens.
Yep.
Dave Felberg.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many great players out there in Arizona. And it's crazy because we have the same thing here. I could go out there tomorrow. Well, December 1st for James Conrad, but we could have James Conrad, Ryan Earhart, Kevin Jones, you, me, I don't know if Austin Turner's in town for the holidays, but like we could have an insane group of eight players go out and play, but it doesn't, I don't know, for some reason in Arizona, we actually did that. We actually got together out there. I don't know. I haven't even heard from Kevin Jones this offseason. I don't know what he's doing.
Kevin Jones absent. Conrad, absent. No throw November.
He's out there working on his wood shop, man. He's out there doing stuff.
I've seen some stuff on his Instagram of him putting in some work, building some stuff.
You know, randomly, Jules and I were at IKEA 2 days ago, and Brian Earhart, James Conrad's girlfriend, Jordan, and Lindsay just came in there, and we just shopped together. It was just completely unplanned, but that's the kind of stuff you have when you live in North Carolina, specifically Charlotte.
Yeah, you guys are over there shopping everywhere at IKEA, and James is building it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, there's something to that.
What's he gonna build if we're not shopping?
That's crazy.
Man, hey, what are you doing?
What am I doing?
Yeah, you asked me what I'm doing. Let's catch me up with what you're doing.
A lot of treadmill, a lot of grinding, man. Out in the field every single day. No, I haven't been doing much. You know, I have a I've been trying to take, I'm not doing no throw November, but I've played a couple tournaments for sure. A couple C tiers. I played a flex start C tier on Friday. Shot 968, got seventh place. Yeah, got destroyed.
That's what Josh told me.
So that didn't go well. had a blast though. See, that's a part of it. I was pissed afterwards. Off of one round flexi C tier. And it got to the point where I got home and I went out and I putted because I missed a bunch of putts. And I was angry. And that's what that see, that's the thing that I need to push me is those little things. When I win, it feels great too. I gain all this confidence. When I lose, I have to put in the work.
Oh, to work on.
You know what I mean? And totally. Other than that, I've been golfing a little bit here and there, playing a little pickleball on the side. I've been given a lot of lessons. Every Monday I give lessons. I've been working on all my projects and stuff. I've been staying very busy, obviously, newlywed. So Sarah and I have been having lots of fun. We've been watching lots of movies because it has been pretty chilly. Yeah, been playing Fortnite. So my off season is going really good.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I'm feeling like next season it's going to be, especially with like having a new place to call home. I feel like there's going to be more of the, I want to go back home for a couple weeks type of mentality, which I haven't really had in a while. With having Jules in the RV, you know, we, in 2022, we were away from Charlotte for 6 months consecutive. I mean, that's hard to do, man. I know that you're the road warrior. You've done that for you're basically your whole career. But the longest I'd ever been away from my house was 3 months. And that was tough. You know, like I love coming back to North Carolina and getting a quick recharge. But I mean, I'm adapted to not having that in the past. But with this new home, I feel like I'm going to want to check back in and sleep in my new mattress every once in a while, get some charge, go back out there on the road. And then, you know, I think the RV will probably come out in late season. But I think honestly, the first half of the season, we're probably just going to be flying and driving the truck out to tournaments for a little while.
That's smart, man. Honestly, I like the, of course, selfishly, the fact that the tour is starting in Florida. I mean, that's a quick drive right over there for us.
Oh.
That's freaking awesome. Instead of I've never been more excited. I hate saying it, but I've never been more excited not starting in Vegas, not taking away from the stuff that Jeff Jacquard does with that tournament because he's done a fantastic
the whole
job.
Vegas crew.
Of
incredible.
Course. Incredible. But the whole process as a pro to get over there from where we live now, when I lived in Arizona, it was the best case scenario.
Julie, it's 32 hours, 15 minutes from Charlotte to Vegas. I know that because I've done that trip about 10 times. Okay. It's not great. Yeah. Obviously when you're Arizona, it's fine, but there's so many disc golfers coming from the East Coast. And I know the West Coasters are probably feeling the same thing, but you've had it good for a long time. You got to drive out East this year.
You're not wrong.
Come on out here.
Arizona, Vegas, then Texas was like a perfect start when I lived in Arizona. And then I don't know, called in a couple favors to Jeff Spring and was like, this ain't going to work for me, buddy.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He likes that, man. He takes bribes pretty well. Honestly, I was surprised at how easy it was to get him to have Worlds in Virginia. That was pretty cool.
I know. He never answers a call though. Ever. He's never done that.
You know, pre him becoming the person he is now for the, oh my God, he answered right every away, phone bam. Call, dude. We used to talk all the time.
Yeah.
And man, I know exactly I've memorized his voicemail. I mean, it's just, I'll recite it if you want, but I mean, just take me for my word, dude. It's frustrating. But
he's a busy man. He's getting stuff done. That's
no
not taking anything.
Here.
Yeah, no, zero jobs. He has more important stuff to do than us.
I wouldn't trade my position for his ever. I mean, the amount of work that it takes for the tour manager or the tour CEO. I mean, what is he? That's
the president,
his official
maybe?
Title. This. Yeah, whatever it is. I mean, he wears so many hats as that person.
He really does.
And he is constantly overseeing so many different things. He's shaking so many hands and working out so many deals and working out the logistics and like just keeping the whole thing going is just not for me, man. That takes somebody with a different set of skills. And he's the man for the job for sure because he does a lot of hard work, makes a lot of hard calls.
What about getting into the important stuff? Okay.
Okay.
This last week, you and I had a little battle.
Oh.
And I wanted to bring it up on air because it's important. It's important for the world to know.
Bring it up.
Of our fantasy.
Yeah.
Of our fantasy matchup that we had this last week.
Sure.
Because there's a lot of football. I mean, most people are football fans. They're listening to us because of, obviously, we're disc golfers.
Because of our football analysis. Oh, yes, of course.
I'm sure there's some people out there that know and are wondering how that went between us. Now that I mentioned
it. Didn't go very well. I will show you the score of our game.
Yeah.
That we played first. The first game that we played. See if we can get a zoom in on here. That is
really blurry.
Yeah, it's, so blurry. It's pretty clear. I'll just read it out loud for people who can't quite see that. Jeremy Colling, a.k.a. the Hot Dog Bandit, scored 215.95 points. And Invisidee, which is Yuli's name, was 145. So it was only a 70-point beatdown. Very recently, as of 2 days ago, Yuli returned the favor. Mm-hmm. Wasn't very kind, but he beat me 181.95, coincidentally, just like me, to 136. So you beat me down by 45 points.
Yep.
Not nearly as bad as I beat you. I still beat you by 30 points for the season.
Well, you know, through the season, you got to build. You know, you got to build a team. You got to coach your team. You got to, like, trudge forward, you know? Sometimes your players don't listen, and you got to get more disciplined. You gotta and you got to bench them. You got to bench the bad
sometimes
players.
Sometimes you got to bench them.
No, that was a fun matchup. What about your Panthers? Your Panthers
it was not
good.
Fun.
It was a blast.
Nothing about this season has been fun with football. Let me just go ahead and say that. It has been all right, look. Some people make fun of me for having multiple teams that I root for. I'm a Panthers and a Packers fan. I was a Packers fan.
No such thing, dude.
There is such thing, and I am a... Hold on a second. I'm freaking going to say this right now. It's so stupid. What is this, Yuli?
That's a half jersey, half Panthers, half Packers.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. That's exactly what it is, Paul. And that's because I am a half Panthers. Well, I'm full Panthers and I'm full Packers. But when the Panthers play the Packers are dead to me. I'm a Panthers fan through and through. Okay.
So you're a Panthers fan. Yeah.
I'm a Panthers fan and I root for the Packers almost as much. Like near 99.9% as much. But
all right. I got a question. Out of all the disc golfers in the world, who would you think would be our best shot in the whole entire disc golf world to make it to the NFL? Is there zero?
Zero. It's
not zero because who has the best shot? Yeah.
Okay.
Like, obviously, there's nobody even close.
Well, Kevin Jones and Chris Dickerson both played collegiately. They were both kickers, which those two for being kickers, that's the only answer.
Yeah.
And like maybe Sullivan Tipton as a kicker as well.
Yeah.
Because he was athletic and I'm pretty sure he played soccer just because I look at him and he looks like a soccer player.
I got one.
Okay.
That I was so surprised about. And then I found out that he was just an absolute savage.
Okay.
And that is, you know who it is. Played in
played football collegiately?
Maybe. It was either collegiately or in high school or something, and he was like, broke all kinds of
records. Played collegiate football.
No, he played he broke like records.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I will give some credit to Big Tap. Do you know Big Tap out there? Mm-mm. He plays pro now. He used to play college football at UNC. He could have gone pro, but I don't know who you're talking about.
I'm going to pull up his stats because I looked him up once. So keep talking. about something.
Okay, well, I can't keep talking because I'm hearing an echo. Okay, now it's gone. Okay, good.
Okay, my bad.
Let's see. Wait, you're not sure who it is?
And no, I do. I'm looking up the stats.
Oh, you're looking up the stats specifically. Yeah. Okay. Man, the only position that I could see anyone that's a current disc golfer playing would have been somebody playing quarterback. So like maybe one of the Wolf brothers could have played quarterback.
Oh, that's a good call.
I mean, you saw me before I had my shoulder injury. I could have probably played quarterback.
Oh, for sure. You could throw the ball.
I was throwing it 60 yards on a tight spiral, but I mean, my mom was scared to death of putting me in the football program. So I played soccer growing up. But I still loved playing catch with the football. And that actually helped me a lot with disc golf later on in my career with the thumber. But I can't think of anyone, man. You got to help me out with this one.
I was stalling because the name is literally a blank in my head and I'm lying the whole time. I'm trying to look him up. I wasn't looking up any stats. I was just, I'm not a liar. I consider him a friend.
Just admitted to it.
I consider him a good friend. You consider him a good friend. And I can't remember his name, dude. That's how old I'm getting right now.
Is he sponsored?
We know him so well. If I say it, I can't even say it because if I say it, I ruin my friendship with him.
Oh, so now you know who it is.
No, I know who it is. I can't bring the name to my stupid brain.
Oh, but even if you could, you wouldn't because then it would ruin your friendship with this person.
Yeah.
Dude, I forget your name sometimes. So it's all good. Yeah. I mean, I forget everyone's name a little bit.
It's going to come to me. I can't believe this, dude. This is so bad.
Can you describe him to me?
As soon as I describe him, you'll know who it is immediately.
Is this bad podcasting or is this good? I can't tell.
This is just podcasting. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Brody leaves and Paul goes blank. That's what happens. Okay, I'll just describe him. Here he is. It's not Brian Earhart. He's the other guy who does all the interviews on the Pro Tour.
Nate Perkins. Yes, Jesus, man. Your way of describing this person was it's not Brian Earhart.
I couldn't think of his name. How is this possible? I've known this guy for 10 years.
That's, you know what? I completely, that should have came to me too, because Perkins was in line to play football, I think at Tennessee. And then he ended up not doing that. By the way, UNC is playing Tennessee in basketball and it's a complete thrashing right now. We scored 60 points in the first half. In case you guys are wondering, that's a good number of points to score.
That's really good, man.
60 points in the first half is big. Number 10 team in the country, Tennessee is.
Silas, how close are we to being able to have Brian come in here? We're good? All right. Now that I forgot everything about all my friends, I'm going to bring on another good friend.
Ridiculous.
I know. Isn't that ridiculous? Another good friend, Schwabe. I'm not allowed to call you Brian Schwabe.
Well, if you call me Brian, I won't answer.
Okay. All right. Schwebby. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me.
We kind of did a little intro before this when we began the show, but I think the winningest player of all time.
Oh, there's no think.
I wasn't sure because I knew him and Elaine King had a battle for who it was. And I think you probably passed her up 2 years ago. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it's a point where they had the thing at the Masters Worlds in Tennessee in 2021. I think I had already passed her.
Okay.
But yeah,
You guys were in a battle to be the first to get a 300 wins.
Yeah. Right? See, Elaine was there way before everybody actually knew because they didn't have some of her wins from back in the past. And the PDGA was going through all their archives to find out all those specific wins to get to this point, you know.
But now we're to the point present, and you're still playing. Germ brought up the craziest stat ever. 39 wins this season. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's been a really good year.
That's unbelievable, God. Dude.
39 out of 50 is not too bad.
Well, the stat that I think is also incredible is how many tournaments have you played, period? It's over 600, right? Or is it 700?
It's over 750. It's close to 850.
Close to 850 tournaments.
I want to say it's like 845, something like that.
And when did you start playing? Like with the PGA?
First tournament was in, I think, like February of 98.
So February of 98, has that just been Brian Schweberger? Have you just played every single weekend and that's just what you have always done? Or have you kind of like grown into this is just what you do?
Well, no, not in the beginning. Definitely not, because I was still had my regular job. I was working 12-hour rotating shifts for a pharmaceutical company, so I could only play every other weekend back then. But, and then when I went on tour in 2002, I don't know. I think I played mid to high 30s as far as the amount of tournaments played.
Yeah,
I did that for 4 or 5 years, then got a temporary job for a year. It happened to be the year that I finished second at USCDC. And I mean, so I was working full time then, and still ended up playing, still played really well. Didn't play that many tournaments that year, but I played well when I had to.
Not many people probably know this, but you were actually pretty close to winning a world championship back in the early 2000s.
Well, I mean, I don't know how close I was. I mean, I got third at the Des Moines Worlds, the best Worlds ever in 2004. Yeah, two people who beat me were Kenny and Barry. I mean, arguably two of the top four players of all time. I mean, so I was in pretty good company. But yeah, I was, and Steve Rico was right there as well. I mean, he and I were tied going into the final line, and we told him we were like 7 or 8 strokes behind Barry and Kenny, so we just said, dude, let's try and put on a show in this final nine for everybody. And it was pretty nice. It was a pretty good time. I think everybody got to see a bunch of cool shots.
How long? What about the season? I'm sorry. I just wanted to follow up with the Worlds thing, because wasn't there a season where you were leading and then you got injured or something like that? Or what happened with that? I'm confused.
That was 2003 Worlds in Flagstaff, Arizona.
Right.
Barry, well, me, Billy, and Brian, and Barry, we always hung out together when we were on tour. And we went into that Worlds. We got there like 2 weeks in advance, and we had so much practice time in. And there was a lot of over-the-top shots just to play safe, to get up some of these new fairways that they had created on a couple of the courses. And I had high expectations going into that event. Unfortunately, we started getting hailed on in the middle of the first round on the snowball course, and it was 11,000 feet up, and there was like 25 of us, and the tournament director, Dan Gilling, started getting people into his truck and toting everybody down the mountain, because there was going to be, I don't think that we were going to finish that round that day. And so me and Kerry Trotter, we were the last two to come down, and so the cab of Dan's truck was full. So Kerry and I just jumped in the bed of his truck and started going down the mountain. And I think Dan was going a little bit too fast when having two people on the bed of his truck. He hit a bump pretty hard, and I started flying out of the truck. And I stopped myself from falling out with my right hand and jammed my thumb. And it swelled up 2-3 times the size, and I had to drop out.
Ooh.
Dang, man.
I had high expectations, and Barry shot like, I think it's like 12 or 13 strokes worse than what I had totally hoped to shoot on just playing how I practiced. So,
dang it, Dan. Dan Ginnelly.
Got you.
I've had to drop out of 3 or 4 Worlds just from being injured.
Well, I mean, the biggest tournaments ever. You play 850 tournaments, and then the ones that you have to drop out of are the world championships. But let's fast forward. So how many years did you tour like full time as far as like with your crew, you know, going off and touring the country?
2002 to 2004, we had my RV and we traveled in that together. 2005, I still did all the national tours. I just traveled on my own or with Burl and Val and Courtney
Burlogger, for those who might not have the... Yeah, Carrie Burlogger used to be a big name in the sport.
Yeah, we did a little Team Spirit because the RV was a Spirit. So we were Team Spirit for the first little bit of the West Coast swing of the 2005 tour. And that year was a lot of fun. I mean, I hit all the big events. I think I finished, I don't know, fourth or fifth in the national tour points because the national tour was the tour back then.
Yeah.
And I think that same year I won the PDJ points title. Yeah,
that's awesome.
For that one. Yeah, I got two obelisks. I got one for the Sportsmanship Award in 2002, and I got the obelisk for points.
You guys both have one of those, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You should have one.
Yeah, I got a few of the points for sure, and I got a Sportsmanship Award as well. I don't know how they gave that thing to me.
Good for you, man.
I'm kidding. So now let's get to the nitty gritty, man. The thing that I'm so impressed with is that 300, over 300 wins, 39 in a season.
I mean, way over 300.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a good starting point. It doesn't matter after that, right? I mean, it's the most out of anybody.
I'm at 388, so I only have 12 to 400.
What?
That's what I'm saying. Way over 300, dude.
I should have looked this up. Dude. That's unfathomable. It really is.
There's 4 weeks left in the year, and he's going to get to 400 by the end of the year.
Dude, like 3 months ago, people were saying, are you going to be able to play enough tournaments to hit 400 this year? I said, no. There's not enough events. Because, I mean, I'm not a big fan of the flex start events. Yeah. I have a lot of opportunities to play them around here, and I just don't. I wish they didn't count towards overall records.
Where does it come from? Like the drive to play all these small tournaments? Because, I mean, I've had conversations with Brody over the last like month or something, and I've mentioned that there's a lot of tour players that kind of dodge the smaller events. For sure, I know that to be fact. What drives you to play every single weekend? Is it just passion for the game, or are you goal oriented? Is it like, no, I want to be the winningest player of all time, and that's why I do this? Or like, where does that, because as many tournaments as you've played is remarkable. Like, where do you get time? And that, you know what?
Well, this is my job. It's my job.
Yeah.
I mean, I deliver pieces Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday every week just so I have something to do. Or otherwise, I go stir crazy. But yeah,
sidebar. Sidebar, Cali Chicken Bacon Ranch on Thin Crust. I mean, that's it for me, dude. I can have that all day, every day. I love that pizza. Anyways, continue on.
But yeah, it's I love competing. I've been a competitive person my whole life. Division I tennis player. So I played tennis growing up, played baseball before that, played volleyball in college, played tournament volleyball recreationally. I was one step below being professional in that, playing two-man and three-man tournaments on the grass and in sand.
Didn't know that.
I just love competition. I don't even have tournament nerves anymore. I mean, people say you don't have that nervous feeling anymore. You shouldn't even be playing anymore. But I've just done it so much. It's just embedded into me. So, well, I mean, your whole one USCDC tee shot, I still get nerves though.
They say that marathon runners actually have a lower heart rate while running than they do in just everyday life. And that's just because they're just geared for that. That's what they're built for. And it sounds like you're just built for playing tournaments, and more specifically winning tournaments. Like that's your natural comfort zone.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I tell people so many times, winning's addicting.
Yeah.
I've never known.
Too expensive for me.
Sounds great.
Sounds awesome.
Second place literally sucks. Second place literally sucks.
Well, how many second places do you have?
I guarantee it's more than anybody. It's getting probably within 20, I think, of 200 second place finishes.
It's so mind blowing. Well, what about, so you say you don't get nerves, but you said USDGC hole one. Well, what about going and playing the big Masters tournaments? Like, you know, I know that you won the Tim Selinski, and that was a major championship for you guys. Did you have nerves there coming down the stretch? Or was it like, oh, nope, this is like a Sunday seats here for me?
Burlington.
Playing age-protected golf is so much more fun.
I was gonna ask that question.
Your own age. You're playing with people your own age. You can talk about things that happened in the past, not disc golf related, and have conversations about it. It's just a different animal playing with folks your own age. Shoot, now I'm 50, so I got three different divisions I can play in now. So
those guys are getting sick of you in that division, I guarantee you.
I'll be playing 40s for most of the bit now. I mean, I'll play an occasional open tournament. I think I played, I don't know, seven or eight open tournaments this year.
Is it okay? That was my question. You strictly play Masters, or do you kind of hop from division to division depending on like payout?
Man, I don't really worry about payout.
You said it's your job.
I was worried about pay. Yeah, but I was worried about payout. I quit disc golf a long time ago.
Okay.
But I am going to hit $20,000 for the first time in my career this year.
Congratulations. That's amazing.
That's hard to do regionally.
Yeah, for sure it is. Especially playing Masters.
I never did that on tour when I was playing all the big events.
I can't imagine that anyone has... how many people have played nearly all Masters and hit that 20K threshold? I mean, that's a really hard thing to do, especially if you're not doing... all the big national. I mean, like maybe somebody came close to doing the national tour days, but I don't think so. I can't imagine. That's a huge number.
Yeah.
As a Masters age player or playing Masters tournaments?
I'm sure Johnny McCray's done it before, after he was 40. Yeah, but I mean, specifically with the regimen of Masters tournaments that you're playing, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I probably maybe Patrick Brown. Because he hits a lot of the big events.
Yeah.
Mm.
But other than that, I don't think of, and I can't think of anybody else.
Did you answer Yuli's question about a goal? Like, as far as, do you have like a number in mind? Like, do you have like, when you think of like the shoot for the stars goal, what are your goals as far as the rest of your career goes?
Just keep playing. I mean, I want to hit 1,000 tournaments. That's if I can just do between 35 and 50 tournaments a year for the next, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, I should hit it. But it all depends on the health. Everything as far as I'm going, it all depends on the health.
What about the wins? Like you talk about it, like you said, it's addicting and it's like this thing, like, there's no goal. It's just tournament to tournament, or are you? Do you have your eyes on 500? Like, is that something that you're like, or do you want to be the winningest player of all time, like you are?
I think if I can stay healthy and keep on the same path I'm going, I won't be touched.
And then,
these two guys.
I agree with that.
Combined.
I'll tell you what, the way Chris Dickerson started off his career, I mean, he hit 100 quick.
Yeah.
And I mean, now that he's on tour, it's so hard to win. So, yeah. I mean, it's, if you get one win a year on tour, you've done an amazing job.
What was more fun to you, playing on tour or playing regionally? And what's the difference?
On tour. On tour was definitely more fun because I got to travel the country because I hadn't seen the country. I wanted, that's one of the main reasons I wanted to go out. I wanted to see what the rest of the country had to offer as far as landscapes and just courses and the people. People were all amazing. I mean, disc golfing back then was, it was really networking for a future. So, I mean, anytime I want to go and play somewhere, I have a plethora of friends all over the country that I can contact and have a place to stay, not have to worry about lodging.
Yeah, that's definitely big. It's like, I don't know, man. I think of today's generation and not thinking about the legends beforehand that got us here. And I think about, for me, you know, Brian Schweberger, Michael Johansson, you guys are the ones paving the way for us that showed us how much fun touring can be and gave us a good attitude to try to emulate. And Schwebby, honestly, man, just, you know this because we've talked a lot about it, but like, you've been my idol since the beginning. You've been my big brother, you know, watching you play, the way that you handle yourself, the way you laugh and have a good time with your card mates. It's like, that's what people should aspire to for sure. So that's just me saying thank you.
Absolutely. Hey, another note, as far as that goes, when you were on tour in your first year or two and you were, I was hearing a lot of people giving you a bad rap about your attitude and stuff. And then as soon as you got home, I took you aside. I said, dude, you are not representing North Carolina very well. You need to adjust your attitude and do better. And
you can hear that from some people, but then honestly, you got to hear it from the right people. And, you know, when I hear things like that coming from you, it makes me take a bigger look into myself. And I think that, you know, anybody that's known, that knew me back in 2010, 2011 and knows me now, you know, knows that, you know, conversations like that went a long way for me.
Absolutely.
I don't
sugarcoat things.
No, you don't.
No. Do you watch the tour? Like, do you watch live or do you keep up?
I watch it all.
You do. So you got a pretty good pulse on what's going on out there. How do you feel about the sport right now and where this generation is?
I think it's absolutely insane the level of golf that's being played. I definitely think it needs to be made harder. I've watched so many of your broadcasts with Brody, and y'all talk about the basket. The basket needs to be smaller. Fewer chains. Go back to the freaking Mach 2. Putting is supposed to be touch. Everybody's just blasting the disc into the basket, and okay, you can throw something really fast on a line. How about showing some touch? Putting is supposed to be about feel, not just brute strength into the chains.
What about as far as the characters on tour? Do you like the superstars that we have and the way that they carry themselves? Are you excited about disc golf moving forward?
I think a lot of, I would say 99% of the players seem to be really good for the game. I haven't seen a lot of bad attitudes, except for the ones from the past that are still out there. But not naming any names.
Looks like Jerm's getting another talking to the next time you see
him. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
But yeah, I really enjoy watching the women. The women's game is so much fun to watch because as far as somebody at my level, they're playing the same style of courses that I would be playing. So it's nice to see how they attack the courses that I would be playing. Like when the women played the regulator in Burlington for U.S. women's, and then I had already played it the previous year at the Sneaky Pete event. It was a couple holes were slightly tweaked, but it was pretty much the same course. And then I caddied for Jen Allen out there, and she played amazing golf, and she won. And then I think two or 2 weeks later, I played the Sneaky Pete and got to play two rounds on the regulator in 1 day. Yeah, I still play two rounds a day. Not like these complaining tour players about, oh, I got to play two rounds in 1 day. Oh, my God.
Yeah, go hike around these courses and play twice a day, buddy.
Yeah,
don't play two rounds. Don't play two rounds on the regulator.
I don't know what that is. I'm good. I'm spoiled, bro, and happy to be spoiled.
Yeah, yeah. It was a 6 mile walk each round.
Oh wow.
No. Yeah. No. If I want to go hiking, I go hiking. Like, I don't go play disc golf and go hiking.
Yeah.
And that was after playing two rounds on the previous Saturday. So I played a 4-round tournament in 2 days. For a B tier. And yeah, it was that's my life.
Yuli, I want to tell you something funny that Schwebby told me on the phone earlier today. He was asking me about my schedule and he asked me if I had any free time and I was like, well, not really. He was like, well, I'm just curious if you might be interested in doing some art for me. And I'm like, well, I mean, what are you looking for? He's like, well, I'm looking for a stamp to maybe do a commemorative for 400 wins. And I was like, but you're at 388. And he was like, yeah, I know, but that should come in March or April next year. I'm like, this dude is planning out 11 or 12 wins from now. Like, you know how long I'd have to go back? Yeah. No, for sure. It's awesome because it's actually like 99% true. Like, that's when that will happen. And we can pretty much bank on that. You know, like Vegas would not take odds because that is going to happen. But I think it's funny because if you were like, hey, Jeremy, what was 11 wins ago? I'd be like, I can't remember 2007 that well. I don't know. Like, it's been like 11 wins is, it's a whole different, like I was in my 20s, it seems like, and I'm 38 now. It's just like, that's just, you don't think of disc golf in terms of wins when you're on tour, but you can when you're regional and when you're a general badass like Brian Schweberger is. Yes. I thought you'd think that was pretty funny.
400 wins is absolutely ridiculous. That's more wins, I bet you, than 90% of the people on tour. Like, there's probably 10 guys that have enough. Like, these new players haven't even played 100 events.
Schwebby. Who were the three people that we, Ezra Robinson, James Conrad, and who was the other person we did our skins match with in Asheville?
Me, you, James, and Ezra.
It was just, oh, yeah, yeah, okay. Guys, yeah, of course. Okay, so it's four of us. I nailed it. Okay, all right. So if you took my career wins, James's career wins, and Ezra's career wins, and you put them all together, and you multiplied those by two, Schwebby at that time still had 70 more wins than the three of us multiplied times two.
Like, doesn't even make any sense, man.
And that was in April. Yeah, that was in April.
That was in April, the day after my birthday.
And he's got 39 wins this season. So that just adds to the whole, I mean, basically us times three is still less than Schwebby.
That's great. All right, Schwebby, two more questions. First one is, who's your favorite player to watch on tour?
That's a good question.
That's a really tough question. There's so many fun players to watch.
Give us a top three.
Yeah, broaden it out. And my last question that you can think while you're thinking of this, who do you relate to the most as far as your game goes? Like, you look at the modern players and then you're like, hey, that guy's kind of like what I got going on.
Well, there's no modern players that play like I do. I can't even say Jake Wilk because he's all over hand and sidearm.
Yeah.
No, there's nobody like Schwebby.
He's like 95% overhand.
Gotcha.
Terry Gallops was on pace to becoming a Schwebby-like player, but
Terry Gallops is probably the closest player to me as far as, and he's just getting back into it.
Yeah, I saw that.
And another 1,100, another player with an 1,100 rated round that probably nobody knows.
I remember that.
Even when I was throwing thumbers, my thumber game is so different than Schwebe's that, like, and I mean, there's not many people on the court. I'm over the top, and I'm like long distance guy. Like Schwebe is like, if I got to throw a corkscrew right down the middle that stays in a 3 foot wide, like fairway, like Schwebe's just pulling out his old Whippet, pulling out his old Eagle, pulling out his old Firebird, like whatever. He's got all sorts of. No one does it like Schwebe, as far as I'm
concerned. Thrown 10 ever.
Yeah.
It's funny. This is a true story. The only time I've ever thrown one in a tournament before this year and last year went backwards in the final nine. I'm not kidding. I was like, I had this bush in my way. It was in Oregon. I'll never forget it. I was in Oregon playing some final nine. And there was like a ditch and a bush in front of me. And it was super windy. It was like a headwind. And I'm like, ooh, if I get this one, I've seen you guys throw it. First, you get it all knifed up like this and it cuts through the wind and you look all good. And I'm like, oh, I could definitely do this. Throw this thing up, gets flat, shows the face, goes straight backwards out of bounds, like 8 feet behind me. It was the most embarrassing moment of my life.
Oh, boy.
I never threw one again.
Sorry that happened for you.
But you know what? I've birdied hole four at Maple Hill.
Yep.
Like a bunch of times in the last 2 years, throwing the thumber down.
Yep.
I haven't hit the gap once. I miss every time and it somehow gets through all this stuff. I'm like, this is the reason people throw thumbers. You don't even have to be accurate with this thing. It's just slicing it.
It was so funny during the live commentary at Maple Hill this year. They were talking about somebody was throwing a thumber on hole four. It's like, wow. Nobody's really ever done that here. And then I texted Philo or somebody else who was doing the commentary, because I made sure they read it. So I did it a couple times. Like, yeah, I've been doing that shot at Maple Hill since 2005.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's a really tough gap to throw that straight touch shot. And shoot, even back then, it was probably a little tighter because some trees.
Everyone was doing that this year. We got Calvin doing it. We got Macbeth throwing the thumber on that hole. So many players are. Yeah, so many people are doing that now, and it's like, there's something about like a player like you, Schwebe. I feel like I relate to you a lot. When you throw thumbers, the way that you throw them, you craft them. You know, the stability matters to you. The way the disc comes to the ground matters to you. The way that it collects and skips and all that. You're calculating these things before you throw them, because it's the thing that you do the best and no one's done it as well as you. So you are the master of thumbers as far as I'm concerned. When I was throwing my forehands, I was throwing them with the intention of getting the disc to hit the ground and match the plane of the ground, the slope, the speed, and all that was very important to me. And I considered it an art form. And then, you know, I start playing with Ricky Wysocki back in 2011. And this dude's throwing overstable Firebirds. He's throwing them fast. They're coming to the ground. They're crashing. And the next thing I know, our discs are next to one another. And it's pissing me off because I'm like, all right, I'm trying to craft this like a Da Vinci. And this dude's coming here like Jackson Pollock, just splattering the disc anywhere he wants. And we're both selling our paintings for the same price. In fact, his are going for a lot more. But, you know, I appreciated
that. He was doing it with PD2s.
And Destroyers and Firebirds and everything, man. I mean, it was just annoying to me, but I always appreciated somebody like you who didn't just throw the high speed fast thumber. You know, you really did have touch with that throw, and it was always an art.
I've never thrown a thumber with a high speed disc. They're all too flippy.
Yeah. Freaking so, who are your favorite players? There. Have you thought about it?
So, well, yeah, well, I've been trying to think about it. It's tough when we're mid conversation. So, but I mean, I gotta say, definitely like what I always like watching Coryell's play. Because with that small run up that he has and how much power he generates from that small compact throw is just absolutely amazing. And if you don't enjoy watching a putt, you don't like watching disc golf.
Right.
That's right. Oh my God. So good.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoy watching Vinny play. the low line drive bullets he throws for 550 are absolutely disgusting. And when his putt's on, you can't beat him. And probably Kristen Sitar.
How could you say anyone else?
Just the way she dissects courses and makes everything
amazing, really.
Just makes it really look really simple. Yeah.
It's hard to, like, when I watch Kristen Sitar putt, like these pressure putts, the way she makes them is no different than first round, hole three. Like, it's the same intensity, the same focus. And you can try to emulate that all you want, but actually going out there and physically doing it is just another thing entirely. And she's one of the most clutch players I've ever seen in just the last two seasons. If we just take those last two seasons in that short period of time, I think that she's developed a portfolio that is maybe one of the most impressive clutch performances I've ever really witnessed.
Yeah, I couldn't. The thing about her putt too is it doesn't. You're saying it doesn't change as far as her mannerism doesn't change. Like, it's the same. It
goes in.
Yeah, it's pretty, and it's a perfect. It's a pro speed. Like, it goes in the way it's supposed to with touch. Like you were saying, Brian.
Yeah, I've watched her play so much. I can, when she's putting, I can tell when it's going to be low. Every single time, it's just something in her form. At the last second, I can tell every single time that it's going to be low.
Yeah, isn't that fun? Like when you're watching a player and you can kind of see, kind of notice, you're like,
you just know.
Yeah, this ain't going in. Yeah, that's...
If tour coaches could be afforded, I would love to get into so many players' brains.
We're not far off, man.
It would be, I could fix so many things that are so simple to fix.
I'll be calling you right after this podcast, my man.
Schwabi caddies for me.
I only do one-on-one. I do not do clinics.
Schwabi caddies
for me at a... Oh, just for him?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, I watched you gain 50 feet of distance with Ezra, dude. That was sick.
Thanks, man.
That was sick.
Brian, we got a couple more minutes, man. Do you have any sponsors you want to thank? I know that is it true you've never thrown another disc besides the end of a disc?
With his right hand.
With his right hand. Like, so even if you're like, hey, will you toss me that disc? Like, toss me my putt back. Left-handed
plastic.
It's left-handed back every time.
That's hilarious. Never thrown another disc.
That's petty.
Loyalty. That is loyalty.
It's so petty, loyalty, and I love every second of it.
If you have any sponsors you want to thank, man, this is the time, buddy.
End of a champion, baby. And my new sponsor this year, Blockhouse Disc Golf and Country Club in Spotsylvania, Virginia. Man, if you've never been to the Grange, you gotta go. It's
different.
It's the best place on earth for a disc golf experience. It's got two great top level disc golf courses, and it's got the best tiki course of all time. I don't think it's even close.
Oh, geez. Is it the first tiki?
I don't know if it's the first tiki, but it's
might as well be
24/7, 365. So you can play it any time of the day. The world record for disc golf holes played in a day was done on that course. Man, it's just an amazing piece of property, amazing people, and it's back. This year is the first year they had an event, and it was awesome to play again.
First ever 1100 rated round, Brian Skinner, 11-17 on the dark side at the Grange.
Wow.
Or at the Blockhouse. Excuse me.
41 was absolutely disgusting.
That place is special. Yeah.
Well, Brian, we appreciate you coming on, man, and sharing some of the history of the sport, the history of your game, which has gone back for so long, so much winning. I mean, it's just fascinating to think about how many times you've had to go.
Unfathomable.
How many times last question, because it's just crazy. How many times have you had a putt to win a tournament? Like, is it over? Like, and I'm saying, like, it's one stroke or you're tied and you have to make the putt. Like, oof. Do you get nervous then?
Where it came down to the last putt, I want to say it's probably less than 20 times.
Wow.
Where it was the last putt that I locked it out or I had to have it to win it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not as many as you think, because I like to think that I play well enough where I can put it to bed before the last hole.
And that includes all your playoff wins and all that? Because I know we've had you've beat me in a playoff before.
Well, no, I mean, I'm not counting the playoffs because I've been in 37 playoffs.
This guy knows everything, dude. Unbelievable.
And so, well, I mean, I'm a stat freak, dude. I love Stat Mando. I am such a big fan. I've messaged him a couple times just to get random things, and they do it for me. And I was like, that's so cool.
Deion's the best, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my one thing that I do in every single playoff, and I learned this from Larry Leonard because he was the first playoff I ever had. He offers up, let's split the money. Let's play for the win. Every single time. It's been turned down twice to me, and they both lost to me.
Love it, man. Well, there you guys have it. The most winningest player of all time, Brian Schwaber. Thank you so much for the absolute pleasure.
Hey, I got a pet peeve for you.
Oh, yeah. Pet peeve it up. What is
wonderful.
It?
When I'm on the tee box, and I'm supposed to, it's my time on the box. Everybody's supposed to be quiet. Somebody's digging in their bag for the disc that they're going to throw. And I can hear them. They're just digging in their bag. I can see going through the disc, going through the disc. Oh, man, it's so frustrating.
That's a great
when I
one.
Hear it, I've had to deal with it so many times, I just back off. Don't even look back because I don't want them to know that they were they're just being noisy and they don't even realize it. It's just something that they do all the time. But, yeah, that's my biggest pet peeve right there.
That's a good one.
I think that's a pet peeve of mine too.
Have a great night. Appreciate you having me on, man.
Thank you so much, Brian.
See you, Schwaber.
See how I snuck in that, Brian.
Well, he didn't respond either. So
yeah, that's true.
That's true.
But isn't that crazy how many wins that guy has?
It's it's unfathomable. Like I would have to live to the age. I would have to not age physically, and I'd have to live until I was 373 years old to get anywhere close to that. At the rate I'm going.
Yeah, unbelievable. What a pleasure. You know what? We have Connor O'Reilly sitting by. So one of the things I want to do, I wanted to get a little perspective from somebody who's been playing forever. And then a fairly new player to come on as well, and that's Connor O'Reilly. Connor, welcome to the show, buddy. Can he hear me?
There he is.
Is he here?
Connor. Hey.
What's up, you guys?
There he is.
How's it going? Hey, let's go, dude.
It's going, man. How are you doing? How's the offseason treating you, buddy?
It's a little slow for me.
Can you hear us, Connor?
Silas, you want to work with him on fixing that for a sec? All right, buddy. Well, while we have our producer work with Connor to get that fixed up, Connor O'Reilly, National Tour winner, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
What, how many Big years time. Ago was that? 3 years?
Yeah, it must have been because there wasn't a National Tour in the last two full seasons, so.
Oh, maybe he's back. Can you hear us now?
Oh, brother!
This is just tour life, man. This is the way. This is the way that it works, man.
I'm in Austin, Texas. You think there'd be some bougie connection here, but I guess not.
Can you hear us?
I can hear you. I'm not hearing Germ right now.
That's rare because I talk a lot.
You hear that?
I hear you, Yuli.
Oh boy. All right. Well, you're just gonna have to pass all the questions down
to. Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly fine. Yeah. It's okay. It seems like we might be on a little delay, so we'll just have to pause for the questions and everything. But first one was just, how are you doing? Where are you at? What's going on with you? Off season time.
I'm doing good. I'm back in Austin right now, kind of stationed with my mom while I'm not playing tournaments for a little bit. And I played two events after I got back from tour. And now I'm kind of just hanging out, doing a lot of Vlogmas content right now, getting that ready. I just filmed day 7 and 8 today. So I'm doing 25 different courses. So one course each day. So that's a lot of hard work and a lot of time editing. So I've been doing that. I've been giving some lessons and stuff.
Oh, love it. Love it. So part of the reason I wanted you to come on is Brian Schwaberger. I don't know if you got to see him. That was fascinating. Been around forever, winningest player, you know, of all time ever. His perspective about like playing and stuff is so cool. What about from somebody like you who just kind of came onto the tour and found success really early at the highest level, kind of winning out of nowhere? And then the follow-up question is, now that you've had a couple years afterwards, what is that like? You know, it seems like a little bit of a struggle the next couple years. Where's your head at? What's the mindset right now?
Yeah, like you said, I mean, early on when I found disc golf, I really kind of viewed it professionally and really tried to approach the game that way. I kind of always was upset that I didn't pursue basketball as hard as I wish I had until I kind of lost it and really realized how much I truly loved it. And I've got a little brother who plays overseas. He's in his sixth season right now playing in Poland. And I don't know, I feel like that regret was something I lived with every day. And once I found disc golf, I kind of like really clung to that. And I don't know, I started really working my tail off and being out of Austin, having Mason Ford and Brad Williams to kind of compete with week in and week out at some of these tournaments. I feel like I was able to almost get like tour level experience in a way, like battling some of my battles with Brad got real intense. And so like some of that stuff, I feel like really got me ready for the tour. And I don't know, I feel like when I am working the way I want to, putting in the work every day that I feel like I should be, I feel like my game is right there with anybody. And like you mentioned, you know, came out, was able to get that win. And then second season was kind of up and down a little bit. This season was definitely rather rocky. My focus level just wasn't great. A lot of kind of personal stress I was bringing onto the course. And I think I'm going to have a lot better situation going into next season. That's going to allow me, I think, to rededicate myself to the game. I mean, I've been dedicated, but just taking that next level that we all know we need to be at the top in a game that's as competitive as disc golf is right now on the MPO side. And I feel good about where I am heading into next season. I think my game physically is as good as it's ever been. I mean, I'm now about to be in my fourth year. Does that mean I'm kind of considered a vet now? I feel like I know the courses. I know the tour life now. It's not like a curveball for me anymore. So I want the season to start like today. I'm just so excited to get it going.
What is that like? Like going through the struggles, give me a little bit of like where your mental state is or was as far as like when you're in the trenches. Cause I dealt with it as well. Like being in there, yeah. And it's so hard to claw yourself out, and it can be a billion different things that are hitting you at once. And you think that it's just like practice or this or that or the other, but it's all situational. Like it could be stuff at home.
Absolutely.
Plus this, plus the people you're hanging out with. And then it all adds up to just bad play. How do you personally sift through that stuff to try to find your way out of that place?
Yeah. And for me, I mean, I felt like I was kind of going on the course, I say like with six bags on my shoulder almost. And as soon as I felt that mistake, as soon as I wasn't on the hot streak that I know it takes to get a taste of that win on a tour, it's like everything kind of changes a little bit. Like that's the standard we all want to hold ourselves towards. And obviously it gets harder and harder every season. And especially this season was immensely tough to get a win. But yeah, I think just continuing to try to hold myself to that high standard. And I don't know, if I put in the amount of time that I feel like I need to and make some of those sacrifices in my personal life to put in that time, almost kind of that Kobe Bryant mentality where, you know, a lot of things do kind of have to take a back burner, and it does feel dehumanizing at times in a way. But at the same time, I have such a passion for disc golf, and I love this game, and I want to like be the best player I can be. And I know when I'm playing focused physically, I have all the shots I need. I have a good game planning mind, and I'm a very critical thinker, and it's just a matter of having the position just to go out there and let it happen and feel free. And I think, yeah, I mean, I think, I feel as confident as ever, even though I think a lot of players would probably feel a lot of adverse feelings with the season that I had last season. But I just know the game I have and how hard I'm willing to work to get myself back towards a consistent level play.
Yeah. Did you, were you one of the last people to get a touring card for next season?
Yeah, I think I was actually possibly the last, the caboose. I think I might have caboosed it, so I slid on in there.
I was looking at the standings because I really wanted to have somebody who was at the border, you know what I mean, of that kind of pressure. And coming down the stretch of your season, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like a do-or-die thing. What is that like, kind of battling for not just like getting cash every single week, but having a way to get back on the tour for the next season? That's something that, you know, I keep saying I had to deal with it, but that's why I want to talk to you, because I don't think people realize how tough it is when you're playing bad to pull yourself out of it. And I've always said this too, there's no pressure like last cash pressure. There's just not.
Yeah.
Because you're coming down the stretch. This is the way I explain it. Coming down the stretch, you're not playing good, even though you're fully capable of playing great golf. And the people around you normally are a lower level than you, but they're playing good, right? They're playing good to get into that spot to where they can get the last cash. So you have these guys.
That's a whole nother layer on it. That's a whole
exactly. So there's these tryhards fist pumping like 20, 30 footers, and you're sitting there like, I can't do anything correctly, you know what I'm saying? And you're battling somebody who just is out there like, this is as good as this person might have played, and they're building on this career that they're making. You know what I'm saying? Like, those are things that go through, and you have to somehow find a way to dig deep to overcome and get a last cash. Like, it is hilariously hard.
Yeah, and I want to say you really inspired me this season, seeing how you battled back and really finished the season strong. And I really see that, and I think that's added just a little stick to my fire. But yeah, no, I think I always tell people when we get more resources on the tour, a super exciting little mini series will be that cash line, just showcasing all the variety of players that are fighting for cash every week or whatnot. And yeah, I mean, I had a lot of times this season in like, where I was, like you said, fighting for my disc golf life, it felt like, where, you know, 2 years ago, I come on a tour, my first season on tour, don't play great, but I prove at a tournament that, hey, I held off Ricky in a strong field with, you know, Calvin, Dickerson, Matty O, James Conrad, you name it, like a lot of really good Woods players. And kind of having that success early and then not being able to find it, I feel like even added more stress on my mind as well. And just like you said, you know, having those weekends where you know you can play so much better, but you're just letting those mistakes stack up in your brain and not having that resilient mindset and that learning mindset, instead of letting yourself kind of be self-critical to a point of the detriment. And it's a battle, and it's a different thing. And I'm just thankful to have kind of got through it and have that. As I got towards the end, I felt like there was kind of that breath of air, seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, like, okay, I've only a couple more tournaments. I just got to buckle down. Like, I got my USDGC spot, the last available opportunity at Maple Hill, and I didn't even play great, but I had some flashes of good golf. And then at US, I was kind of like, all right, I have 2 weeks to prepare for this event, and this is going to be like, I feel like how I can kind of get myself some momentum going in the next season. And I played my best US that I've played in the 4 years that I've been there so far. Had a chance to go to a top 20 finish if I birdied 18 after almost a pristine drive, like one flat landing zone right before that little drop zone. And then I just made the fatal mistake of missing inside and then missing long on the second and taking a triple, which was just like a bit. It was such a bad way to admit, but I still got a 30-second finish or whatever, and I was right there knocking at like top 20, which, you know, when you're right there, you know, you're a couple holes away each round from being in the mix for the win, and that's the place that I want to kind of find myself at. And I know I can find myself at when I just am focused on the shot and keep my visual focus locked and don't let my mind drift.
Yeah, and that's a great point, is 30-second, listen, it is fractions away from a top 10, and top 10 is fractions away from being in contention. Actually, top 10 is kind of in contention most of the time with how tight these fields are. And so, like, that was one of the things that I really struggled with, was I was used to just being in contention all the time. Being in contention, top 10s were just like, oh, dumb. This is every single weekend. And then got to the point where I'm like in 30-second, and I'm like, 30-second is bad. And I had to flip my mindset to be like, 30-second is great. What are you talking about? Like,
the tour's different nowadays. It's not the same as it was.
100%. Like, the tour is completely different. Like, a 30-second place finish is damn good. And you better be proud of yourself, because if you keep beating yourself up for good play, that's where you find yourselves in the complete dumps, losing confidence over good play. And that was something that I really had to switch. You know, Jerm, can we hear you yet?
I want to say I love you, Big Jerm. I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
It's all Connor, can you hear me at all? Can you hear me at all right now? No, nothing.
Nope. I can put the blame on you. I'm just going to tell everybody this. It's my poor connection.
It's a fascinating conversation. But Jerm,
if you have any questions for him, you can talk to me and then I'll tell him.
I mean, all I have to say is I feel this whole conversation about last cash pressure. And you can just tell him, man, like I've been living that train for the last three seasons. And it's such a different switch for me. And for any player who's used to, like what you're saying, Paul, being in contention, to finding this new position where all these new players are coming up, it's hard to appreciate this, you know, the fact that you're not in top 10 every week like you once were. But you know, you have to work as you get older, you have to work twice as hard just to keep the same spot. And we don't really have the time. We don't, that's not really a luxury that either one of us and a lot of these players have anymore.
Yeah. So Jerm just basically said, you know, part of it is tough too, because of the jobs we have. You know, you were just talking about your YouTube channel and doing Vlogmas. And I know you do a lot of things on tour too, from commentary, just like us, to, your YouTube channel, like I said, and then keeping up with social media, keeping up with the sponsors. If you have your sponsors, you want to do a photo shoot, this, that, and the other thing. All that stuff adds up, man. And part of it is it's what you have to do if you want to be successful in this game at this point in time in the juncture that we live in. Like, there is, for me, there is no other option. Like, if I don't do all these things, then I won't be a relevant player, and that's not an option for me. Like, that's never been an option for Paul Ulibarri. That won't be a thing. I want to be a household name, and it is a selfish thing of me, but I will do whatever it takes. If it's the social media, if it's the commentary, if it's this, that, and the other thing, I enjoy it, but I also, that's who I am now. You know, I'm a professional disc golfer. That has brought,
at the end of the day, how can you really give to other people? You know, it's like, I feel like to truly give your best, you got to like really fulfill yourself. And so I don't think it's selfish. I think that's what you should want, Paul, because this is our job and this is what we want to do the best job we can at. And yeah, like Jerm said, it is a lot trying to juggle all those things. I did FPO commentary to all the Elite Series. I did MPO commentary to all the Silver events this season. And I don't think I'll continue that FPO for next season. I think that was a little bit much. I just wanted to kind of have like a resume building year in a way.
Yeah.
Kind of get my commentary feet wet a little more and kind of get a little more of a body of work out there just for the future. You know, I'm 31. So realistically, I want to push my prime for another 5-8 years. But who knows, you know, depending on the luck you can have. And, you know, I'm gonna do my best to take care of myself and try to push that prime. But and like Jerm said, it's a lot of work. Like for me, a full day that I want to take every single day to like get myself ready is going to, I mean, it's 10 to 12 plus hours of work, depending on the day. It's waking up, getting to the gym for that hour, making yourself feel good about yourself, and then hitting the green maybe for a half hour. Then you got your 3-hour practice round, probably another maybe half hour, then I like a recovery routine to get my body kind of ready for the next day. And that alone is going to be 7 to 8 hours, 10 hours with eating and travel time in between. And then you mix in the social media, the editing and stuff. There's days where, you can work 16 hours, but I think for me, I see such a golden opportunity in disc golf, especially right now. Like you said, like all the players who are pushing away that extra work, like you're pushing away the money, you're pushing away the fandom, you're pushing away allowing people to see you as not just a disc golfer, but a person. And that's how they can connect with you a little more in a way often. And I think it's important for every player to put their character out there, and just people are going to find ways to relate to you, and it's going to endear them to you. And I think every player should be striving for that. Otherwise, you're going to kind of get lost in the sea of players that's continuing to grow.
100%. What things are you going to work on going into next season? Because what I see every single year, dude, it used to be if you got like 6 birdies in a row, like now it's like, like that's the norm. You know what I mean? Like it's crazy. What are things, like for me, I want to work on circle pretty, like I feel like that's something as an old man can go out there and work on. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to bust my butt and get to the field and do all these things. I've done that for a long time. I'm just looking at simple little improvements. What about you? I mean, coming into this season, is there like a specific thing?
I think putting is definitely a big thing for me. Circle one and two, I need to definitely grab a couple more percentage points in both of those for the season. Throwing wise, I feel like I've always thrown pretty consistent. When my head's on straight, I feel like I've always kind of been one of the more consistent throwers off the tee. And I think that short game, not having that attachment to whatever the stroke is, just committing to that good committed stroke every time. I think circle one and two are a big focus for me this offseason. And for me, I think building a consistency weightlifting, like now that I can really keep going throughout the season. So I don't feel like I'm kind of off and on with it. And then I'm like, oh, I didn't work out last week. Do I want to work out right before the tournament right now? Am I going to be overly sore? And I just don't want to have that dilemma at all. I just want to make sure I'm consistent with my routine, and that I feel like I need to be the player that I want to be, because like the time is now. Disc golf is, it's only going to continue to get more and more cutthroat as we go. And I think you got to front load your work. Otherwise you're going to get lost.
You have somebody that you're able to relate to on tour. Like I've been lucky enough to have Big Germ in my corner, and we do commentary every night and we struggle together, man. We've had a couple bad years together, and at night, man, sometimes we're both grumpy. Sometimes he's grumpy. Sometimes I'm grumpy, but it's good to have that person there that can completely relate with you. You know what I mean? I think that's something that I never told him that I was thankful for, but I am very thankful for that. He just didn't turn into an absolute superstar and leave me in the dust. I appreciate you hanging out in the gutter with me, man. No, but for real, is there somebody out there like that? I mean, you see familiar faces when you're waking up early. You know what I mean? And you'd be like,
yes.
Like it's the truth. If you're always teeing off at 2 o'clock, those guys see those guys all the time. You go warm up, you're putting together, you're throwing in the field together. When I went for half the season, it was the same dudes. And I'm like, you know what I mean? It's like different crews that you end up hanging out with in the morning. Is there somebody that you were like able to kind of take that tough journey with?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm trying, from afar, I feel like I've always kind of related to you guys in a way. Your competitive spirits and the way you guys are just kind of doing everything in the disc golf sphere. So like from afar, I've always kind of absorbed and related to you guys a lot. I feel like even though I'm a lot younger in the game than both you guys. But yeah, trying to think about someone who stands out. Me and James definitely have, Conrad, have a good relationship to where like we have a lot of those come, but I know he had a lot better season than me. So he was definitely a lot more kind of pitying me. I'm trying to think in those mornings. I mean, I feel like Linus, me and Linus had some mornings. I feel like I'd see him out there. We'd be talking a bit. And I'm trying to think who else. I don't know. I don't want to throw anyone under the bus too
much.
Look at the rankings and look at it.
Yeah, like this is my. It's like okay, grab your buddy for the rest of the season.
I mean, me and Connor Rock kind of became buddies in a little bit, I guess, because he was kind of in a similar range to me, and you know, naturally having the same name as someone, it's something you can't. It's just a sticking point that never really leaves you. It's weird.
Yeah, you know me and Macbeth,
you're,
too.
You're one of many
how that worked out. We're always hanging up there together at the tap. that's hilarious.
I've always loved both of you guys are able to kind of balance some of that self-detrimental humor that I think you almost have to be able to do sometimes. Otherwise, you're just going to lose it and you're going to be a person you don't want to be. So I think sometimes it's easier just to talk a little mess about yourself and bounce it off. And
it's not funny.
I appreciated that about both of you guys.
When I talk crap about myself, it's 100% serious. There's no humor there.
You know, I made a
backhanded compliment.
I made a post actually recently about that, about how, so like in the past, I've definitely been like very self-deprecating in certain areas, but I also think that it's like a social thing that I do because the people who really know me, like you guys know how overly confident I am in every aspect of everything. And
as you gotta be.
And it sucks sometimes for me in social ways because I don't like giving that edge of like, no, that like, you know what I'm saying? And so being able to make fun of myself has definitely helped me to relate to a lot of people. Even though deep down inside, when I talk bad about my game, that is not what I believe. Sometimes I do believe it, and I think it came maybe from some of me overly doing that, you know, overly self, like, degrading myself, and I had to get away from that for a little bit to be, like, start putting it in the universe of, like, no, I'm not a bad player. Like, that is not a thing. I am not bad at this. I'm not going to do this. I'm coming out of this, and I'm going to be a winner again.
Your body does not understand sarcasm.
Yeah, and I think that is important, and I think it is good. Oh, okay. If you find yourself, if it becomes a habit, I think it's definitely important to, you got to correct that. And like you said, I kind of relate to that a lot where I do the self-deprecating humor, but, you know, when you hold yourself in a certain level of confidence that you almost need to be a top-level athlete in whatever sport you're doing, it has to be this level of confidence that's almost unrealistic to a lot of people, and so I think that's hard to handle. And so I think, like you said, that is a kind of a mechanism to fit in a little more or whatever.
Well, it's one of the biggest things that I see people even say about me is they're like, oh my gosh, this guy's so cocky, like unbelievable. I keep talking about yourself and blah, 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 blah. And it's something that like, it's
arguably your greatest strength though, throughout your career, I would say, you know?
Right. Like, I think you hit it on the nose. It's believing that you're something different. You know, like I'm just built different that way.
And yeah.
It's as I get older, it's easier
if you've never told yourself you're built different when you're on that little streak, like, come on. Give it to yourself.
If you aren't saying those things, if you're saying what everyone else is saying, then you're probably going to be doing what everyone else is doing. Yeah. And it's not that just what you say, it's what you believe. There's a reason why, you know, the people who are on tour are on tour. There's a difference between them and the other people who are at home who can judge all they want, but they're judging from the stands. And if you want to make it in any sport, in any profession, you got to believe that you are the best suited for that. And you can tell Connor this, the whole, your body doesn't understand sarcasm thing is something that I was told that this year. And I think it's something that I'm going to try to implement in 2024 because I say these sarcastic things to myself and then I believe it. And I don't mean for myself to believe it. I say it sarcastically, but my body doesn't understand that. And then I start getting upset with myself and not believing I can do it.
Yeah. Did you hear that, Connor? Can you hear me, Connor?
No, I like faintly hear Jerm in the back, but
okay. He basically said that your body doesn't understand sarcasm. So when you say things, it just believes it. And I think there's so much truth to that because, like I said, as soon as I stopped saying that stuff and I started putting the good things out there, people were looking at me like I was crazy. And in fact, Sexton told me this. He's like, I have to give you props because you told me that you were going to switch your season around. And, you know, I was looking at you with the side eye, like you've lost your mind. But that's the thing. Like I'm over that part of it. I'm trying to be better at that self-talk to the viewers at home too. Like that self-talk is so important. It's so important to tell yourself that you're good enough. It really is.
I mean, like you mentioned earlier, with the way we got to streak those birdies together, if you're not building that positivity in your everyday life and just compounding on it every day, it's hard to find yourself in that flow state. You're going to find yourself with more distractions or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
You're going to let little things affect your mood more. And I think, yeah, I feel like, luckily, I feel like being an older player, as you guys know, I feel like I have good emotional control, and that's something I feel like I can take advantage of or some of the kind of youngsters we got out on tour.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like you said, 4 years, but 31, man, you're going to be a veteran here before you know it. And the tour is becoming so young. I mean, so young. Like, what is it? Like 16 to about 20 is like, I feel like the average age for the best players in the world right now. And then there's a few anomalies up there.
I mean, dude,
that are trying to hold on. But
before the final round of USDGC, I'm warming up. I meet this other Latitude kid, Hjalmar Fredriksson. I'm like, oh, how old are you? The kid's 16. I'm about to turn 31 in like 3 days. And I'm like,
Hjalmar is 16?
All right. that's different.
Oh my God. I can't believe Hjalmar is 16. Whoa. Dude's going to be nasty.
I'm not surprised anymore. Every time I meet somebody new, he's like, yeah, I just assume they're 17, 18 years old. 19, 20, something like that. 22, 23. It's all young to me, but it's crazy how young everybody is and how talented that our game's really getting.
If you can't buy a scratch off lottery ticket, I don't even want to talk to you.
Jerm said, if you can't buy a scratch off lottery ticket, he doesn't even want to talk to you.
That's the way it is. I'm sorry.
Right, like I mean, we're one of those sports where like there is no age restriction. You can, it doesn't matter how old you are, you can play, which is definitely an interesting thing.
Well, moving forward, what do you got planned for next year? Everything all the same for you, or got any?
No, I actually got a little announcement. I got a hat on that I can maybe turn around. That might
Let's see it.
Well, I will be actually throwing some Texas-made plastic.
Ah, nice.
Next season. You know, let's go. Texas boy.
There you have it.
Kind of coming home. Going to be playing for Lone Star Disc. So super excited to announce that. It's a Tour Life exclusive. So happy I could bring it here and let it out.
That's awesome. That's our first ever Tour Life exclusive. Yeah. Dropping the big news.
That's right, Terry. Take it, Terry.
Congratulations, that's awesome, man. Though, man. That's awesome for sure. What is that? I mean, what does that feel like? What does that change for you? How do you feel like moving forward with them?
It feels good. I mean, I'm already finding a liking for a lot of the discs, and I think just relationally having someone that wants to work with me with media a lot more. And that's something I've put myself out there. Like I'm willing to do a lot. I'm willing to do pretty much anything someone wants to do for me or like to do with me promotionally. And I like being in front of the camera. I like teaching. I like just putting myself out there, like you said, taking as many opportunities as I can. And I think with them, it's going to be a good partnership for being able to kind of be one of the forward faces of the company and kind of work hand in hand with them to try to grow the brands together.
Especially being from Texas, that's going to be really easy for photo shoots. That's what I always think. Like, the closer you are to your sponsor, like it makes everything so easy. Yeah. Jerm's lucky. He's got Innova across the street from him. Basically, I got to fly to Michigan, but you know, and then it's like that hometown feeling too. You're going to be able to like spread the word of their company in Texas. And I'm very happy for you, buddy.
Yeah, no, I think appreciate you guys. And I mean, they definitely gave me that family feel kind of right away. And I know, like, you know, everyone, regardless of whether you want to or not, everyone has a little bit of like pride for some kind of thing. And a lot of people in Texas have that state pride. And I think people in the U.S. in general, I want those U.S. made products, and you know, knowing it's coming from right here, I think it's 3 hours from where I was born. I think it's kind of cool, and it was the first time I got to see the disc manufacturing process, which that was kind of neat too.
Oh, that's cool.
I know we all have that dream.
You're gonna get the bus wrapped? What's the new wrap gonna look like?
Yeah, definitely gonna get the van rewrapped. I'll probably stick with kind of the Clover theme. I think it's just an easy marketing thing with my name that just kind of stuck. And you know, big germ is a marketing thing. You guys understand. Sometimes you know it just works too easy. You got to take it. I mean, what my first nickname I ever had disc golf wise was Big Irish. So people just coattailed off of Big Germ and like, this guy's large and he throws forehand good, and you know, let's call him Big Irish.
That's a great nickname.
I
just kind
of rolled with it. Realized it was going to be one of those things. I couldn't earliest. So.
Hey, can I give you some advice?
First ever disc golf nicknames, and I remember I reached out to Big Germ. If you, yeah.
Oh, keep going. Sorry.
Oh, so I reached, if you look at me and Germ's Instagram DMs from a couple years ago, I reached out to him hoping he would like make my first logo for me, because I knew Germ was into some of that stuff, and I think he just ghosted me, and rightfully so. I mean, I just got lost in the inbox. So.
Lost in the shuffle. Are your clovers right now 3-leaf clovers or 4-leaf clovers?
You know, we got to go to the 4-leaf. People love that disc golf look. You know, right, people good. Say there's luck involved, so you got to rock with it.
Perfect. That was going to be the advice I was going to say. Get rid of the 3-leaf clovers, bud. You got to smother those 4-leaf clovers everywhere. Dude, I got so, what do you call it? Superstitious. I started picking 4-leaf clovers, and then I started playing the worst rounds of my life. And so somebody told me to eat one once, and I'm like, okay, I'll eat it. I ate the 4-leaf clover.
Oh, it was probably me, dude. It was probably me with the wood swirl. I've told so many card mates on tour, there's this little, like, it's a 3-leaf heart-shaped clover. It's called wood swirl. Has a lot of vitamin C. They used it, like, back in the day on pirate ships because it held longer than, like, a piece of fruit. But
okay, so, I never ate.
I'd be teaching people.
I never ate that, but I found
an actual clover?
Yeah, okay. So I ate the 4-leaf clover, thinking it was going to bring me good all luck. Right. Worst round ever. So then got so superstitious that now I find the 4-leaf clovers and I just let them live. Because I'm like, now I'm
That's
like,
what you're supposed to do.
I can't kill this 4-leaf clover and expect it to give me good luck. This is bull.
You got to leave it for someone else to find it. That's the whole point.
Appreciating life and all of its forms. I like it.
Yeah, I still haven't found the good luck afterwards. But hey, you know what I mean? That 4-leaf clover is lucky that I didn't chomp it down.
Next time we card up, I'm going to have you try some wood sorrel. It's pretty much everywhere. It tastes like a lemon.
I'm a pretty picky eater. Well, not so picky, actually, right, Jerm? But I'm a pretty picky eater.
Getting better.
And so, all right, I know that Connor can't hear me.
Yeah.
Can you just tell him that I'm gonna go on a tiny little rant?
Jerm's so gonna go on a rant real quick about me.
Okay, so Paul Ulibarri says that he is not a picky eater, that the people who have a wide variety of tastes are picky eaters. Now, the reason that he says this is because he doesn't have to go around picking different things off the menu. He just has his favorite item. The rest of us who have a more vast palate, if you will, have to look around and they have to be picky because they're picking different things. It's the stupid things like that. This is the type of confidence that Yuli has, that he can deliver a dumb message like that and truly believe it in his head. That's the level of confidence that he has.
It makes sense.
Okay, anyways, that's it.
You guys are picking and choosing all kinds of different stuff. I just like a select few things. Perfect. I'm not picky at all.
So dumb.
Oh, it's funny.
Makes my head hurt.
It does not.
Well, Connor, I heard that classic Germ rant, but didn't.
Yeah, you're lucky, buddy.
Just
you're
watch
lucky.
The show back.
You said you're still going to be doing some commentary next year and stuff. Also, plug your YouTube channel for Vlogmas for sure for people out there to get some more content on the good old tube.
Yeah, no, we'll be doing 25 days, like I said, 25 different courses and throw in the new plastic as well. So it's kind of been fun learning that as I go. Already had some metal hits off the tee. So, you know, we're getting close to that first Lone Star Ace already. And I think, there's Connor O'Reilly on YouTube, and there'll be 6 pretty big giveaways on the first day, as well as every 5th day after that.
Yeah. Do us all a favor and go over there. And
thanks to Yuli for having me, and
definitely subscribe to his YouTube channel without a doubt. Also, hit a like on this one. Make sure you're subscribed if you're watching the Tour Life. And you're welcome, Connor. I interrupted you again because that's what I do, and I apologize now. Your floor is yours, big guy.
That's our setup right now. No, I just want to say thanks for having me on. I know Brody's off enjoying himself in Hawaii, so hopefully he has safe travels back. And Big Germ, sorry I couldn't hear you, man. I love you, and I hope you're having a good off season. And Yuli, like I said, you've been an inspiration to me in a lot of ways, and I just I see so many good things that you do that I want to learn from, and I just appreciate the opportunity to come on here and share the new signing, and it's been exciting. It's been fun.
I appreciate the kind words, man. I really do. Nothing but the best for you. Good luck next season. Let's wake up a little later, huh? How about it?
Yeah, dude.
Oh, cheers to that, brothers.
All right, buddy.
All right. Dang, man.
Connor dropping a heater right there. Off season movement.
Man. Yep. Connor O'Reilly, it looks like Latitude. Latitude is in the middle of a rebranding process, a lot of the North American Latitude team, they're moving to other places because they're trying to, I think, do a dynamic discs in the North America thing, and maybe Latitude in Europe. I could be wrong about this. This is just my speculation. Yeah. You look at all the best Latitude players, they're moving to other places. So, they've got a great product. I think that disc golf is in great hands right now with all the different manufacturers competing for market space. When you see things like Innova working with Discraft at the USDGC, you know, for a long time there was some bad blood between those two brands, and now that they're working together, it's opened up the doors for other partnerships that are just amazing for our sport. And you know, for a long time I thought we all kind of felt like, as players, like this is kind of petty, like let's get past this so we can work together and grow the sport. And I think that we're getting to that place now, and it's cool to see. Absolutely.
And that makes sense for them to kind of do that. The market space in the US, I mean, is just kind of exploding with all these new companies everywhere. No doubt. Everybody making all kinds of discs all over the place.
Yeah, there's room for everybody to flourish, man. We got a lot of new players coming in the sport, and there's just so many different ways to make a circle fly in cool, unique ways. And, there's obviously the mainstays. You got the Innova and the Discrafts, and we can throw Latitude in there because they've been around long enough now. But like these new companies, they're worth checking out as well because they got different feel of the plastic, different feel with the putters, and it's cool to be a new player in the sport in this day and age, because there's just so many new things you can try out, and you can find out what works best for you.
I mean, look at what MVP's been able to do over the last few years. I mean, they absolutely exploded, and they did it with some good branding, getting some really great players and the most popular player that we have right now, I feel like, behind probably
hands down
Macbeth, Simon.
I would say Simon's the more popular player. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it is Macbeth still, but Simon is just.
I've heard people say that Simon's more popular than Macbeth, but I don't think that could be possible. I think inside maybe the sport, but when you look up, let's say you're just a casual disc golfer, everybody's looking up who the best player is or blah, 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 and Macbeth has to be the most, I guess, well-known.
Macbeth moves the needle.
Yeah.
He moves the needle. And I mean, but I think there's one player that's the most popular, and it's Kristen Sitar. I think she's got to be the most popular. Like, how, the thing is like, Simon, Simon is like one of my favorite people. Same. I love Simon. But the thing is, Simon is he's a bit shy, and he doesn't necessarily want to do a ton of public things where he has to go interact with people he doesn't know. And that's just like one of the things about him. And that doesn't mean that he's any less popular, but there's like, there's a thing that maybe that might irk somebody if they're meeting Simon for the first time, because they might not be like, oh, that's the Simon that I know from YouTube. That's a different Simon, because that's a Simon that I see out in everyday life. And that person might not live up to the person that you might think that they are. Right. That whole point is, Kristen is exactly who you see at all times. To any person, anytime, she's the sweetest human being I've ever met in my life. She is incredibly, she's an incredibly good sport. She's now the Sportsmanship Award winner of 2023, absolutely, which she deserved 100%. And on top of being the best sportsman, she's also the best player. And she's got an incredibly marketable product through and through all the way. And so anyways, I mean, the sport's in good hands for a long,
without
long
a
time.
Doubt, without a doubt. What do you think as far as, like, Brody and I have been talking about movement the last couple weeks? Have you heard any whispers?
Oh, I got whispers, buddy. I got my little minions looking around, bringing information back to me all the time.
What do you got?
But I can't share any of that. That stuff is you know that. There's just little things here and there, you know, people who are, you know, I'm gonna let them announce that on their own time. You know, it's not for me to say. You know, like there's people who I don't know where they're going, and I could speculate on those people, but the people that I've got a better idea on, I'm definitely not gonna break the news.
I was trying to get you into a boo-boo.
But not today, buddy.
We got some listener questions. I'm gonna look up here, man, and then we're gonna let you get to bed. Let's see here.
Yeah,
this will be a good one.
Okay.
Would you two, meaning you and I, consider going to the Australian Open? I believe it's in Perth. Absolutely. Yeah, consider it.
Yeah. I mean, I've got where's my dang it. I think I brought my stuffed animal over to the new house. So I'm still in the house that Jules and I have lived at for a while, and I've moved some things over. But one of the things that I did bring over was my stuffed wombat that was given to me as a gift, because they felt bad for me that when I went to the Australia Open in 2017, I was sick all day. I mean, all week for 7 straight days, I was on this guy's floor with 105 degree temperature the whole time. So I need to go back to Australia, more specifically Perth. That's where it was last time, and give it another shot. I would love to play a tournament out there, and the Australia Open would be a great excuse to get back down south.
I've never been. I want to go. Probably not going to go.
Yeah. They've got a lot of shrimp. Gosh. A lot of seafood down there that you'll love to not pick.
Next question is, this is a good question. This is, would you two ever consider not doing commentary? Do you think that not doing commentary would make you a better professional disc golfer? This is a great question, because I've struggled both ways. I'm hard-headed, so I'm like, no, I'm going to be fine. This is what I do. I'm also really good, which I don't think a lot of people understand, at compartmentalizing a lot of things and being able to structure that in a way that I can be successful in different things. Would it make me better? It would make my life easier for sure. I don't know that it would make me a better disc golfer. I don't know.
That's a great question. And as a commentator for the last 7 seasons now, I've been thinking about this a bunch. But the thing is I won't give that. That part of me is now one of my favorite parts about my career. I love doing commentary. I love being behind the microphone and talking about disc golf and watching disc golf, and just more specifically working not just with Jomez, but the people that work with Jomez.
Yeah.
Like, I love our crew so much. I love working with Yuli and Nate on a nightly basis. I love that it gives me another career. And, you know, what you said earlier, talking to Connor, like, doing this gives us a way to remain a superstar in the sport, keep us relevant. And that's huge for me in my position. Like, I serve such a small role as just a standalone player for my company. Would I be a better player? I think so, but I'm also 38. And it, like, the time that I started playing commentary. Yeah. All right. Take it easy.
Before you keep going, have you ever seen the Kevin Hart where he's interviewing that guy and he's like, I'm 50, whatever. And he goes, whoa. And he goes, wait, what was that? I'll send it to you afterwards. Keep going. Sorry.
That's all right. But it's hard for me to really track whether or not my regression as a player is more due to the fact that I've been focused on multiple things as opposed to just playing disc golf pre-commentary days, or if it's a combination of that and the fact that I have just gotten older. And the competition has come swooping up like a bat out of hell. And it, you know, like my rating, if you look at my rating, you can judge my placement all you want, but look at my rating over the last 10 years or 15 years or whatever. Like, I've stayed in the 1020s this whole time. I am no less. I'm a better player than I was 7 years ago. In my opinion, I think that I'm more capable of making a putt, of throwing an accurate backhand, of finessing a line, of making a correct decision whether to go or lay up, than I was 7 years ago. But it doesn't look that way because the field has just eclipsed me, you know, multiple times over. But you know, that's the way the sport is. Like I said before earlier, we have to work twice as hard just to stay in the same spot. And for me, that was like, I was kind of averaging anywhere from seventh to inside the top 20 in my best days, you know, and then I'd still finish in the top four every once in a while, but it was kind of rare. But that doesn't happen anymore because there's,
you know, that's 30 that's dudes also who are something that I hear a lot of people, especially the new generation and new fans, especially talking about Big Germ and his career. Let me tell you something. This dude, because they're like, oh yeah, he got lucky with this and that, blah blah blah. Don't you have 5 Elite Series wins?
Yeah, in major.
5.
Yeah, I got lucky. I got lucky 5 times.
You got lucky 5 times.
Yeah.
Like, that's mind blowing to me. Like, you have 5. Who else can you put on that has 5 Elite Series wins off the top of your head besides like the obvious ones of Ricky? I mean, you had more than Simon for the longest time until the last 2 years.
Until the last 2 seasons. I mean, yeah, it's crazy. I, you know, Brady Hanna and I, Brady Hanna from Deuce Squad, if anybody remembers that company, close friend of ours. He would always call me after my one big win a season and he'd just be like, oh, so you got your one win this season. And, you know, that was a joke for like 5 years in a row. I had a tour win, of a notable career win every year. But it was just one, you know? So it was like, why was I always just performing at one Elite Series event? I don't know. I mean, I wasn't. I was performing at other ones. I just happened to get a win, like one win a year. But it's really wild because I thought that, or at least I hoped that could continue into 2019, because it was in 2014 was Maple Hill, then 2015 Memorial, 2016 USCGC, 2017 and 18 was Waco, and then in 2019. The whole year passed and I didn't get one win, and then USCGC comes around and I come up one stroke short of getting into a playoff with James Conrad. And I was certain that if we went over to hole one, I was taking down that trophy and I was going to win my second USCGC. But because that didn't happen, and then in 2020 was a shortened season.
Unbelievable.
He cursed me. He cursed me. And I will never forgive him for that. But yeah, then I got cursed with COVID and then I got old in 21, 22, 23. And now I'm just terrible.
Yes.
I'm kidding. My body doesn't understand sarcasm. I'm not terrible.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, if I don't win another turn,
dude, you've had an amazing career. You've had an amazing career. And that's what it actually frustrates me when I hear people talk about anybody who's been at it for a long time, who've had a really great career. People, you know, it's mostly the youngins, the young kids won't name names, but they're like, oh, that guy's awful. It's like, that guy's awful.
Yeah.
Dude, Germ's going to be in the Hall of Fame someday, you dumbo. Like,
well, it's a disc golf, like, is just like any other sport. It's a what have you done for me lately thing. And as far as like competing in tournaments, you know, I haven't done anything for anyone lately. Like, and I get that. I'm not like, I hold myself to a high standard, and it pisses me off when I don't finish well. And like Jules gets this, unfortunately, experience the wrath of my frustration after the rounds, because I'm still insanely competitive. I could make a lot more money if all I did was just commentary. I selfishly am still competing on tour because I have that fire in me to still compete.
Do you think you still have a win left in you, or two or three?
I think going into this last season, I thought for sure I was going to pop off at some set point. And I still maintain hope that, you know, I think any given weekend, if you're good enough to be on tour, then you're good enough to put things together and win. I mean, not trying to say that anybody is a one hit wonder, but like Parker Welk wasn't necessarily in contention at many tour events this year, but he won the DDO. You know, and that's all it takes, is just showing up and being in the right place at the right time, and then finding that spark where you know that 47-foot putt is going in. You don't even, there's no question about it. You knew walking up to your lie 3 minutes ago that when you walked up to your lie, wherever it was, that disc was going in the basket. And that's just a magical spark that, you know, it doesn't come around that often, but when it does, and you're that person, it could be your week any given week. So I maintain hope that I will put myself in position to enjoy the thrill of the hunt, and hopefully could take it down another one. But like I said just a minute ago, man, I don't need that. Like it.
Yeah.
And I guess the fact that I know that I don't need that might remove that killer instinct that gives you that edge when you are in that situation. But, you know, I'm going to give myself as many chances as I possibly can while I'm still doing this, as I know you are too, buddy.
Well, I do know that it's going to be 2024. Your first win was 2014. I don't know.
10-year reunion. Woo.
Man, you're old. Holy cow.
So much so. But you know what? If we watch this in 15 years, we're going to be like, oh my God, we were little babies. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
We still got some youth left in us, buddy.
For the longest time, I'd see old pictures of myself, and I'd be like, I look kind of the same. Now I look at myself, and I'm like, who the hell is that? What'd you do with Paul Uleberry?
You grew this thing. Whatever this thing is that you keep, I don't know, you leave it on there for some reason, but
yeah.
You didn't have that so much back in the day.
Stash, man, the dirty stash.
I wouldn't call it a mustache.
No Shave November, dude. Give me a break.
Yeah, that's No Shave 2023 is what you got on your face.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh man, Jeremy.
Any more questions?
You want one more? I'll give you one more.
Let's send off with one more question, and then we'll do our little goodbyes.
All right, let's see here. Tell us about the first time you met Germ. Where were you? What were you doing?
No, not this story. I hate this story. No, it's a good story.
All right. First time I ever met Big Germ was in 2000. I don't know. I'm mixed up about this. No, because I met you before this.
07. Yes,
so the first time. They're both hilarious stories. I'm only going to tell one this time, though. I'm playing, it was 2007, I'm playing at the USDGC. What I thought was a big Norwegian man. He had this long hair. Didn't you have long hair back then, I think?
I had like the wings. My hair was long in the back.
He looked European, and I was like, this guy's caddying for somebody or something.
I had the wings.
And he comes up to me, and we were trying to throw over the water or something. But he basically asked me if he can throw one of my discs over Winthrop Lake. And I'm like, no, I don't have any discs for you. And he's like, no, I promise I can get it over the lake. Blah, 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 all this stuff. So I'm like, you'll never get this over the lake. He kept saying he could. I gave him a Z Flick. And he threw it directly in the middle of the lake.
I threw that thing hard, and I committed to the Anheuser. I crushed that thing as far as it would go, and then midway through the lake,
a parachute just shoots out the back of the Z Flick, and it just goes kaploosh right in the middle. Yeah, that was bad.
That's the first time I met him. But after that, I was like, all right, I'm out of here. Like, this guy just threw my disc in the lake. I trusted him. I met him again in 2007, and that's when we really kindled our friendship that we have now.
2008.
When you won AM Worlds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You met me at a perfect time.
So I met you, when I really remember, I do remember getting that Z Flick and crushing it halfway. But what I do remember was after I won AM Worlds, it was really important to me. AM Worlds was like a huge stepping stone in both of our careers. And I knew that you were the only person on tour that was an amateur world winner. Justin Jernigan played regionally here in North Carolina, and as did Jack Schmalfeld a little bit, but for the most part, all the other amateur world champions before you kind of just weren't on the scene anymore. And I had a very distinct goal that I wanted to A, win AM Worlds in 2008, and then B, I wanted to be a mainstay on tour. I didn't want to just fizzle out. And you were kind of a beacon for me to look up to and use you as an example of people that are doing it. And so after I won AM Worlds, like, you were one of the few people that I sought after to say, hey man, like, I'm in the club now. I want to be like you. I want to be on tour. And I probably did it in my very gregarious, youthful, big germ way, where I just sounded like a complete dweeb. And you probably had no idea what I was talking about. I was probably talking faster than my mouth can move. And I'm sure it left a really great impression with you.
Yeah, so he came up to me after he won AM Worlds, and he goes, Meanwhile, I missed like a 12-footer on the last hole to miss cash at the World Championships for the second year in a row. So I'm in the worst mood ever that there's ever been. And here comes this big guy that I had never met before in my life, and I didn't recognize him from him throwing my disc into the lake because he lost his hair. And so he comes up to me and he goes, hey, did you see my shot? And I'm like,
oh, that's what I said. Oh, God.
I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, did you see my shot on 18, the final nine? And I'm like,
hole nine.
Or of hole nine. I'm like, no, didn't see your shot. Like, what are you talking about? And he goes, I parked hole nine in the final nine, and I won the amateur world championships. And I'm like, why are you talking to me right now? I'm sitting here by myself on a chair in the middle of a field, clearly just irate. And this is how he starts the conversation with me. So then I'm like, I talked to him for a second, and I end up getting his number, and
you're in the world, aren't you?
You gotta tell the world. Yeah. And I put him into my phone as Gumpy because of the way he was talking about it. He just came up, first words out of his mouth were, did you see my shot? And I'm like, oh gosh, here we go. But just so the world knows, it's still in my phone as that. It's never changed. We've been best buds ever since. So that's the first time I've ever
Gumpy, man. And there was a crew like Robbie Bratton, Corey Sharp, Steve Mills. I mean, anybody that you really hung out with back then, nobody called me Germ, like, not in that crew. They just called me Gump. And I don't know what point that like changed, but I mean,
maybe after you started kind of being better than all of us.
Yeah, it's like when we used to call Ricky Whitesocky, because he was wearing those ridiculous
high white socks,
like, just above the ankle height. Like, the ankle height makes sense as an athlete, but when you go above that, but you don't go the full on quarters, it's like you're living in this weird world of like, you just become Ricky Whitesocky. Mm-hmm. And then it was Ricky Why So Lucky. And then we had all sorts of weird nicknames for him. And then it like very quickly became Sir Ricky. Oh, I'm so sorry that we ever called you a bad thing. Like,
cause he just,
yeah. Oh, sorry.
Everything.
So then, yeah, he became Socky Bomb because of a funny long story. But yeah, that's how we met, man. And honestly, we've had some rocky situations in the past, obviously, as best friends tend to. But, you know.
Also some tough times that we helped each other through, too.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, like, that's how you can tell the testament of a true friend is, like, you know, Yuli, for all the things that he that annoy me about him, he is, no, of course, the person that you have always been is something that I've always really liked in a true friend. And that is somebody who will, out of the blue, call you just to ask how you are. And that's something that he's always been really good at. And to me, it's just a sign, you know, anybody who has a friend like that knows that just is, you get this feeling that you can trust them, that you know that they care about you. And when Yuli started doing that during the off seasons and just checking in on me, it was like, I know this is somebody that, you know, if things aren't going well, I can talk to him. And so then we started reciprocating that. And then, you know, that was way before we even started working together on Jomez. Yeah. And so when people see us bickering on Jomez, some people say it's old. Some people say it's the reason they watch our practice rounds. But regardless, like, it is a true brother on brother atmosphere there. It's like two dudes who have nothing but love for each other. But at the same time, like, sometimes you don't want to see your brother.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I've never had a brother, but I can imagine.
I've never had a little brother before.
I'm taller and older. But that's how it feels. It's how it feels, man. And I've always appreciated that. No doubt.
Every time that the show ends, for you to go to the Spotify and give us some likes, also on Apple. Remember to subscribe, share it on your social medias, and we appreciate you guys for coming, listening to the podcast, and we'll see you next week on The Tour Life.
Thanks, Rick.
When raising a Pacifico beer with friends you just met turns into hitting up their friend's local art show, getting inspired to create something together, and painting your first mural, you found what was waiting for you. Pacifico. Life's waiting. 21 plus only. Discover responsibly. Pacifico Clara Beer. Imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.